Good morning, good evening, wherever, whenever you may be listening. I'm John Vogel, and welcome into the John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. So this episode is coming to you a little bit later than normal, in which I do apologize. It has been a little bit of a crazy weekend for me personally. I have guard duty that started today. That's why this is coming to you later than normal. I haven't gotten to this until after I had completed guard duty for the day and been released. Now, we have some really big stuff that's going down right now in sports. So it kind of worked out to our advantage, that this ended up waiting, you know, till the end of the day, because we had a lot of big news come out that we can kind of get into and talk about. We are also joined today by a very special guest on this show, Mark Jarvis, What's on Draft NFL. And Mark is a very knowledgeable guy. We get a really good conversation with him, kind of talk about the process and that in which he does his scouting and his opportunities that he's had with his career. He's had a very, very phenomenal career to start out. So we're going to start with all of that. And I think we're normally, you know, as I like to say, college football comes first. Today, there's been so much big NFL news that we're going to start to hammer in on some of this other stuff going on. So we're going to start NFL today, probably take a break, talk with Mark, come back, and then get into some college, because there's a lot of big stuff going around on the NFL. And it's kind of going to be centered around the NFL draft and how important that is. It is so vitally important nowadays for a team to invest heavily in the upcoming NFL draft. And we're going to talk about why and how this pertains to the information that has been coming out. So what we're going to start with here is, obviously, there's been two crazy moves that have happened. And the NFL's been getting much bigger, much better about these blockbuster moves that shock the world and blah, blah, blah. And people freak out sometimes about some of this stuff. So we're going to start with the Minnesota Vikings trading their defensive end, Yannick Ngakoue. I think that's how you say his name. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I may be very wrong on that. They have traded him to the Baltimore Ravens for a third-round pick in this upcoming draft and a fifth-round pick the following draft. I believe that fifth-round pick is also conditional. And considering that this is a guy that just got traded from Jacksonville for contract issues and so on and so forth, the Vikings have started out very poorly this year. Now, they had a very, very good draft. They have a lot of very good young talents. If you look across the board, Justin Jefferson has replaced Stephon Diggs perfectly. You know, just Diggs got traded to the Buffalo Bills, and the Vikings were able to cash in on that trade and pick up Jefferson, and it was perfect, and it was a phenomenal move on their part. Jeff Gladney is another very up-and-coming great talent at the cornerback position. They got two corners in this draft that have worked out for him, Gladney and Cameron Dantzler out of Mississippi State. So if you look at, you know, we on this show, we had, you know, people talk about this draft class. I think Thor Nystrom was on this show talking about the NFL draft class from the Minnesota Vikings. But this was a very good draft. They're very young, and they've had a very poor start. And a lot of the poor start can be attributed to a couple different things. One, first off, obviously, the quarterback position is a problem right now in Minnesota. Kirk Cousins has very, very, very seriously struggled, and it's at the worst time, because this would have been the last year of his contract with the team, the 3-year blockbuster they signed him to a couple years ago. This is his third season in that, but this offseason they signed him to a 2-year extension so they wouldn't have to haggle with him this offseason when the NFL, you know, quarterback market goes through the roof. And now it's not really working out for him. It's looking like one of these deals that is just bad for the team. And he's holding them back. And that's not good at all for them. Now, these blockbuster trades are starting to happen because NFL teams are starting to realize right around this time of the year whether they're going to get in the playoffs or not. You also have opened up another playoff slot, which means that there's more teams that are still in the play for the playoffs. So if you're 1-5 and you're sitting here, you're technically still in the run for the playoffs, but realistically, do you want to be, or do you want to try to play for next year? And we're seeing a lot of these teams already starting to auction off, quote unquote, their players, so to speak. The New York Jets are doing this. The Jacksonville Jaguars will be doing this very shortly. The Minnesota Vikings are starting to do this. You know, so the bad teams across the board are auctioning off their players and getting out of the playoff race, establishing themselves some draft capital. Now, what that's creating, there is a demand to give them this draft capital, as you see with Ngakoue getting the, you know, a third and a fifth round pick. And the demand is there because the playoff race is that big. When you add two teams to a playoff tournament, and the, you know, your total goes from 12 playoff teams to 14, that means that week 17 is going to be intense. And your trade deadline is coming up. It's around week 8, week 9. After that, you can't trade people anymore. So if you're going to make a move, you have to be very aggressive and you have to do it now. And that's kind of what we're seeing across the board. All these people, all these teams are investing heavily in this playoff run because it's that vitally important that they get a good playoff run. It's that vitally important that they get that player. And these other teams collecting draft capital right now are sitting there going, yeah, well, we're in a fire sale like the New York Jets are right now. The New York Jets are an absolute fire sale. I don't think anybody is safe on that team right now. These teams, they want the draft capital. They want to be able to invest in a completely new team. They want to hit the restart button. And there's some teams that have needed to do that. We've seen, you know, the Miami Dolphins do that over the last couple of years. We've seen the Carolina Panthers really do that with the reset button this year. This is what's really, really interesting. These teams are all in on the playoff race. The first seed is now vitally important because it's the only one. There used to be the 1 and 2 seeds got a week off. Now it's only the 1 seed gets that bye week. So you even see these teams. Baltimore. Baltimore's very, very firmly and securely in the playoff hunt. They got to beat Pittsburgh. And that's what they're moving to do, is they want to beat Pittsburgh. Because if they can beat Pittsburgh, they're going to win the division. The Browns are not going to compete with them, and neither are the Bengals this year. So this trade was them essentially going all in, trying to do everything they can to land that number one seed, because the only threat that they have to the number one seed is the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers win the division. If they manage to maintain and hold the best record in the league, that's it. You know, so you look at Antonio Brown now. This was the other big news that came out this afternoon. Antonio Brown appears ready to sign with the Buccaneers tomorrow, on tomorrow being Saturday, October 24th. He's flown into Tampa. He will be ready to play in week 9 after his suspension. And if he lands with the Buccaneers, this is another one of those big moves that this is what we're talking about, the playoff hunt, making that push for the number one overall seed. Because who are the Buccaneers trying to beat? They need to beat the Seahawks. If they could beat the Seahawks and beat them handedly, then they're going to have the number one seed. They're going to be, you know, in theory, they're going to be in the Super Bowl. So this is still playing into this. Tom Brady is supposedly, according to reports, a big part of getting him, making the push and the motion to get Antonio Brown to Tampa Bay. That's all assuming that Brown keeps it all together and plays. I think he's been out of the game long enough that is a concern that you're looking at. But it's a risk that's worth taking, because if he's even 50% of the player that he was, or 75%, you know, if you look at the risks, this is a very low-risk signing. You're going to get him for about 9 weeks at tops. So you can start week 9. So you're going to get him for 9 weeks of the season. And you're going to be able to add him to a receiving core that already has Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And Rob Gronkowski just had a big game against the Green Bay Packers. And Cameron Brate has been a solid tight end. And OJ Howard is still on this team. And I can't imagine him making it through the trade deadline. But as you can see, this is a big move. This is another one of these moves where these teams are pushing for that number one seed. And this is not going to be the end of the big moves. You know, the Ravens also went ahead and put in and added Dez Bryant to their practice squad, as far as I know. That actually happened. And people can ask, well, what's the point in doing that? Why are we adding him to it? Well, because you never know. If he comes in and he bombs out on the practice squad and he plays extremely well, then you just had a win, right? You just won that signing. You bring him onto the regular roster, you knock some guy down. I'm sure you've got one on your 53 man that you can slide down onto the practice squad if he's legit. And so it's a very, very low risk signing. It makes sense. Now you're going to see as we get into the rest of this year, you know, like as we get approach the trade deadline, there's going to be a few more blockbuster trades. And it's going to be teams making pushes, being like, we need this piece on our team. Here's the guy we think that could be that piece. And things are going to get crazy competitive. This is all good for NFL. These are all good things. You can't expect anything better from these things. These are all good. Okay, so don't take this, you know, this information. A lot of people will take this way, but don't look at this as something that is bad and say, oh, well, this change, it could be. No, this is all going to help make the league, first off, more fun, more interesting. Two, it adds the element of competitiveness to it that we haven't seen the likes of yet. You were worried about teams tanking. This is how you fix teams tanking. You add more of an opportunity for them to compete and give them a reason to compete longer. And that's what the NFL did. And so this playoff format that's coming up, we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen it in action. It's already a win because we're approaching the trade deadline and shit is flying off the wall, so to speak. Things are happening. And that's what the NFL needs. That's what the NFL wanted. And with that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mark Jarvis joins the show. We're talking NFL draft. What's on draft NFL? This and more on the John Vogel Show. Welcome back into the John Vogel Show. Today, our special guest, one of the biggest up-and-coming people in NFL media, is none other than Mark Jarvis at What's On NFL Draft. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
What's On Draft NFL? Almost every time I go on a show, man, everyone gets it. I always try to remind people, keep in mind that it's What's On Draft, not What's On NFL Draft.
What's On? That's right. You're right. My apologies. Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Awesome. Pretty good. So, one of these days, I think we're gonna start seeing your account, your Twitter account, showing up on these top 100 lists and must follow lists, because you're starting to get a lot of big name recognition, and your journey has really been something in this media industry. Watching you go from, you know, like, I got onto you when you were still like, I think 1500 followers is when I found you. You're putting together the database. So let's take a minute and let's talk about you for a second. Like, what got you into NFL draft specifically, and what made you want to do this?
You know, I think it kind of like a lot of people did growing up. They always loved playing Madden, that sort of thing, and like the team building aspect in franchise mode. And so that's kind of what got me going into football a little bit and kind of going down that, like, okay, let me think about team building. Let me think about these aspects and think about the draft. But honestly, where it kind of started, it was started on a forum. I was on this forum, you know, it was just general NFL stuff. But every year around March or April, everyone would start talking draft, and the guys on there are always awesome. They'd share, like, here's my thoughts on player X, Y, and Z, and here's, you know, my big board and all these different things. And so seeing that was always so interesting to me. I'm like, you know what? I should just start making a big board. And I didn't watch like any tape. I'd watch like a highlight video and be like, oh, this guy's so good. And so over time, I started to get more into it. I wrote my first scouting report, and then I caught what everyone calls the sickness. You write a scouting report, man, you just don't want to stop. You want to watch another guy write another report. And that was around 2016, late 2016. I was just starting college, and I had about 20 scouting reports. I'm like, man, I want to put these somewhere. So I made my website. It's a piece of junk site, or at least it was. It's slightly less piece of junk now. There's still a lot of crap with it that needs fixed. I'm not a great web designer, but you know, it's just kind of I got into it and I just haven't stopped. You know, it's something that kind of takes over. You love watching ball and it kind of hooks you in.
All right, so let's talk about some of this NFL draft stuff, because you've always had some more spicier takes, and I think that's generally because you like to put your own opinions together. You don't necessarily listen to what everyone else is saying about somebody, like the group thing. We talked about that on this show before. So what is your process when you're like looking at a prospect and you're kind of like, I like this guy a lot? What are the things that pop out to you?
Well, let me just say first off, regarding the groupthink thing and like having different opinions, I never had different opinions to have different opinions. Like, I've always, if I had put down an opinion, even if it was wrong, I genuinely believed it at the time. That meant when I was just starting and I had no clue what I was looking for, there were some really awful opinions just because I'm like, I'm sure Juan Price is going to be really good. He's 5'11", 230 or whatever, but I liked his hands and I liked these certain things. And it was completely misguided, but it was always just, what did I see? Let me take what I'm seeing on tape, write the notes down. Kind of, I like to consider myself kind of like the transcriber for the tape. I'm just writing down what I'm seeing. And if it goes against the consensus, it is what it is. You know, I've never been afraid to have have an opinion and just trust my eyes. Certainly it has led to a lot of misses. But I think over time, being committed to, hey, I'm gonna write down what I see and improve and improve and improve going forward, I think has helped my process get better. And I think it's genuinely made me a much better evaluator overall. But when I'm looking for things on tape, man, I mean, we could get into some specifics here. How do you kind of want to approach this?
Well, I think, I guess where do you pull your I need to watch this guy is probably a good place to start. Like, how do you pick the guys that you're watching?
I think it's interesting because my process has changed so much from like year to year in terms of how I build the board and like build the watch list basically. So when I first started, it was kind of like, let me go on CBS Sports or NFL.com and see who's getting graded high. Like, you know, who's Deshaun Watson and why is he rated so high? Let me go watch him. But over time, I've certainly turned into more of a, I don't want to call it a schedule because I'm not a very well-scheduled person. But it's kind of just a process of let me like to give you an idea of how I approach like the database and building it up is I'll take every guy that meets a statistical threshold. So like if you're a linebacker, you need 50 tackles. If you don't have 50 tackles as a linebacker, barring like injury or something, if you play a whole season, you don't have 50 tackles, you're probably not making much of an impact. Are you a full-time starter? You got to meet these certain thresholds to kind of get on that watch list. And I'll kind of crowdsource from like, you know, if TDN has a guy that I don't, I'll throw him onto the database and throw him onto the watch list. NFL Draft Scout has a great list for that too. So I try to just get as many names as possible on there and just kind of get everything I can. So I'll have, you know, 1,000, 1,200 prospects that I have listed on the database. So like, okay, here's a guy who meets these thresholds. He was a starter. He has X, Y, and Z accolades. Let me have him on the list. And then from there, this year especially, I've been taking a school by school approach. So I'll go turn on the Oregon tape and say, okay, Oregon has, you know, two running backs, two receivers, an offensive tackle in Penei Sewell. They have all these guys on defense. And then kind of just make my list of here's all the guys I need to watch for Oregon. Go through, knock them all out, give them all grades, and just kind of move through that way.
So you got the opportunity this year, this past draft cycle of 2020, to work on the Lindy's NFL Draft magazine. I believe you wrote some of the reports that are in there, correct?
Yep, that's
So
correct.
how did you get involved with that? What was your process when doing that?
So that was really cool because I honestly thought the email was fake at first because Rob Rang emailed me and I'm like, wait, why is Rob Rang emailing me? Like, I'm just, you know, small time draft guy who has bad opinions and strong takes that nobody agrees with on Twitter. Why am I getting this email? And I look through, I'm like, man, this email seems kind of legit. Like, I think this is like actually a real email. And so I looked through it and you know, responded. And Rob was just a very great guy to kind of talk with. And he offered the opportunity. He said, hey, man, I like your work. Would you like to be involved in Lindy's? And I said, of course, man. Like, I would love to jump on this opportunity. So got going on that. and just kind of they gave me here's the guys we kind of need. You know, I had a lot of the background work done on a lot of players anyway, so I was able to kind of just translate that over to what they were doing. But man, it was an absolute blast. It was crazy to work for something that put all that, like, there were so many people involved with it, doing such a great thing, putting that product together, and then to have it shipped all over the place. I mean,
my local Walmart in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee has it.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, my mom goes down to Walmart and gets a Lenny's Draft magazine and brings it home. It's like, Mark, look. I'm like, wait, you got that down at the local Walmart? What? So it was crazy to have that just kind of get as much wide publicity as it did, and to be a part of something like that is, kind of a tried and true tradition for so many people who are interested in the NFL draft, so many people who are kind of in the industry, to be getting eyes on that and have my work involved in that.
So the last thing that I'm going to say about you before we kind of start talking some NFL draft here is, I don't know, the first time that I met you was at the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really the first time that I'd ever interacted with you. I don't think we'd really, we talked a little bit on Twitter here and there, but nothing really extensive. And I think I was talking to Malik Harrison's trainer when you walked up, and you're like, hey, and I immediately got, you remember, you know, did you meet Bill Belichick when you were down there?
I did not. I saw Bill from afar, but I didn't meet, like, actually get
to him. I was that guy. I took Donnie Druin from Sports Illustrated, and we walked up to him, and I was like, hey, Bill, I'm John. Do you have any film analyst jobs? And he was like, and I went, I'll walk away now. Thanks, Bill. But that energy that he puts out, like, that was, like, the same sort of vibe that was the first vibe I got from you, was that Bill Belichick energy, like, the crazy genius, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God, like, what am I going to do? And then you said, you want to watch some tape? And I said, sure. And so we went in the film room, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do this. And had a great time. It was good to, you know, like, to get to know you a little bit as we sat there and we watched the tape. But you kind of have that vibe about you when people first meet you, you know, like, that Bill Belichick, that crazy, like, kind of vibe thing. Like, is there something you're not telling us about your process here? That, like, are you this crazy, crazy genius and we just don't realize it yet? Or, you know, what's going on here?
I mean, I can't compare it all to Bill Belichick. I think the only thing there I can compare is style-wise. He likes those hoodies, and I like the hoodies too, man. I think actually, I first talked to you when we were at the media, before they had Javon Kinlaw and all them come up, and you'd come over and said something about the database and thank me for the database. And I was like, I know I was probably a little bit weirded out, because, like, I never expected anyone at the Senior Bowl to walk up and be like, hey, man, thank you for the database, because it's just
okay,
the database.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, But that's the thing of, like, I'm sitting there in, like, my Wilmington College hoodie and my gray sweatpants with my ripped up shoes, and Benjamin Solak's over there dripped out with, like, the snake boots or whatever, and I'm just like,
yes.
Man, I don't belong here with these media people. And that's one thing, like, I think, I always try to take the approach of both at the Senior Bowl and just in life in general, man, I am what I am. Like, I'm going to be the wearing the hoodies. I'm going to be kind of doing things my way. But at the end of the day, I'm going to try the best of my ability to put the work in. And, obviously, I'm not like a Bill Belichick crazy genius. I'm just, I'm in love with the process, and I'm more about doing the work than kind of doing appearances, so to speak.
So coming up now, I know we talked about this beforehand. We both really haven't looked any Big Ten, so I'm not going to try to get into anything like that. But Big Ten is starting this week. With all the lateness going on, and, you know, with certain seasons starting later, the seasons that were canceled, just the craziness of college football this year being taken to a whole nother level, what are you kind of hoping the NFL does with the draft process in terms of, you know, the pre-draft process leading up to it? Is there a certain approach that you're kind of hoping to see from them, maybe a delay, you know? What do you think would be the best way for the NFL to approach the upcoming draft?
It's a weird one, because with COVID going on, you don't really know how things are going to play out until they play out. You know, you have maybe the combine goes on as usual, and then 3 days into the combine, there's a huge outbreak, and they say everyone's got to go home. So it's so tough to kind of forecast that and take a guess at what's going to happen. In my opinion, I would just hope it's as business as usual. I think the combine, the way they approach that event, obviously it's going to be a lot less media. They're going to be a lot more sealed off about it. I hope we still get to watch all the 40s and all that. The Senior Bowl as well, I think they're going to have all the NFL personnel there, and maybe a little bit less media. But my hope is that just teams that are in the Big Ten, teams that are in the Pac-12, the Mountain West, the MAC, the teams that are kind of coming in late on the season, maybe only play six games, we'll see them play those, you know, six-ish games, maybe do a bowl game, and then those guys can kind of just carry on to the draft process as usual. And then when we get to the All-Star games, I just hope everything kind of goes smoothly. I hope we don't have any major outbreaks. I hope they don't have to push it back. Obviously, you can't really predict it just because maybe the NFLPA Bowl has a big outbreak and they have to close it, or the Shrine, or even the Senior Bowl might have that. And then maybe they have to kick it back an extra week or two. I know the CGS is already talking about moving it back in towards late January. Some people talking about maybe the Senior Bowl moves it back. I don't know, man. I hope that things kind of just, like I said, go business as usual, that the way they approach these events, they can be safe, they can be smart about the logistics side of it, having any issues that kind of slow things up. Because I think when you break it down to, like, what it is, the Senior Bowl and the other, like, bowl games, All-Star Bowls, basically, you have 100 to 120 players out there practicing, right? And then the combine, you have 200, or it's more like, what, 300 guys? 120. So you have 320 guys basically just getting medically tested, doing some athletic testing, and then they're on their way after interviews. So I hope the way they approach it is still, like, if you break it down to, like, okay, we just got to make sure these 320 people at the combine or the 120 people at the Shrine or Senior Bowl don't get COVID and get sick, then I think it's, you can kind of play it off a little bit easier and make it more feasible.
Fair enough. Okay, so coming into this year, have any guys popped off the tape in the first few games of the season that you did not have your eyes on? This is any position across the board.
I'm going to keep it completely honest with you. I don't know if I've watched any 2020 tape yet other than Bailey Zapp versus, I think it was like North Texas, and that was out of necessity because I couldn't find his 2019 stuff. I'm still working kind of on the backlog of 2019. One thing I'm trying to do is get as many guys done from the, like, baseline grade of, like, a preliminary of, oh, this guy is worth investigating further. He should be on my board. Mm-hmm. And here are the guys that I can kind of just cross off that, you know, maybe they get, like, a late camp invite or a tryout, but they're probably not going to be on my board personally. So I'm still kind of back on the 2019 loop. So I don't have anyone from 2020 that I can really talk about that has really impressed me. And also, I don't know if you know this, I don't usually watch games live. So I haven't been, like, tuning in every Saturday to see who's playing, you know, Florida versus Texas A&M and seeing how Kyle Trask is doing. So,
gotcha. Okay, so let's take a step back then and go to 2019. Is there anybody that you're not really hearing anything about right now that we should know about?
Coin Ding from California is the one I've been talking about all summer. 6'6", was 225 last year. Apparently got up to 245. He looks it. He's posted some photos. He looks built. But incredibly long, incredibly athletic linebacker who I think is going to be a future star middle linebacker for someone in the league. And then there's a lot of guys that I've kind of fallen in love with as mid-round gems. A couple that stand out in my mind, Buddy Johnson from Texas A&M. Not the most athletic guy, but incredibly smart. His processing speed and ability to diagnose the run is very, very special. He's got some good positioning in the pass game as well. Not going to be a liability there. Grant Stewart from Houston, another linebacker I really like, about 6'1", 210-ish, smaller guy, but he flies around. He's got great hustle. Jim Nagy kind of shouted him out as a player to watch for just because he's what teams look for as a special teams player, a guy who's just all hustle, has enough athleticism to work, and is incredibly tough. So those are a few linebackers that I'm particularly in love with. But if we wanted to jump around, I could go to a couple different positions.
Yeah, dude, any position across the board.
Okay, so let me just off the top of my head here. I know these guys are more like the fifth round range. Brady Davis, Illinois State, a guy I really like. He was originally expected to be in last year's class. I think it was just some eligibility stuff. They kept him there at Illinois State. He was on the Senior Bowl watch list last year. Wasn't on the top 250 this year, but got a really live arm. Surprising in that regard. He's athletic enough to make it work. He's still learning kind of the nuances of the quarterback position, but I think there's a lot to work with from a tool standpoint. B.J. Emmons from FAU, running back who transferred over from Bama. He's about 6'2", 230. He's so smooth. You don't expect the guy's 230 to kind of move in and out like he does. He's got good agility. I wish I'd see a little bit more in terms of the contact balance, but there are some questions about, you know, he hasn't been very productive. He's only had, I think, like 90-something carries through his career, so Can he kind of translate that through the rest of this year and be more productive and kind of put himself on the map as a guy who can be a workhorse back? Tape-wise, I think he has the potential to do it, but he hasn't really produced. Wide receiver Brennan Eagles from Texas, I have him graded as a third rounder. I know he hasn't been very productive this year, which I expect him to be with Duvernay and Colin Johnson going pro. But Eagles, about 6, I would say 4-ish, 6'5-ish in that ballpark. He's a big dude, 225, 230. But one thing that stands out with him, he's got a little bit of long speed to him, but you're kind of surprised by how good of a route runner he is. He's nuanced. He knows how to kind of vary up his tempo and get defensive backs guessing. He's not going to wow you with in and out of break quickness, but I think he's a surprisingly good athlete for his size. Got the catch radius you want to die for, too, as a scout. So those are a few guys kind of more at the skill position group that I'm really excited about in this class.
Who is the under-the-radar quarterback that everybody should know about? Because there's 3 or 4 names that are floating around right now. So in your opinion, who is that person?
Like I just mentioned Brady Davis. He's the guy I would kind of stand on the table for. Mm-hmm. I watched, I think it was 3 games of him in the summer. And I just wanted to verify because nobody was talking about him as a dude, and I kept seeing a lot of flashes on tape. So maybe he just ends up being a flame-out guy that nobody else really picks up on, but he's the one I think is really underrated right now. Anthony Brown from Oregon is one I'm very excited about. He was a transfer from Boston College. Yes, solid yes. size. I think he's about 6'3", 210, somewhere in that ballpark. But very solid athlete for his size. I think he's going to run somewhere in like the 4.6s, 4.7s. When you let him kind of get going in a straight line, he can pick up yards as a scrambler. Got a cannon for an arm. There was one player I remember. I think it was against Virginia Tech last year. He was throwing off platform and ripped it about 50. He was sliding to his right and just launched it. You're nodding your head because I think you remember seeing the play.
Yeah, I definitely saw
pretty,
that.
It's pretty memorable, man. So when you look at him compared to a lot of these seniors, most of these seniors don't have the arm talent that teams kind of want in an NFL quarterback. I think Anthony Brown certainly has the athletic tools. It's just a matter of putting it together. Can he start this year over the other guys at Oregon? Is he going to be productive? Or is he going to be one of those guys who's just very athletic, a lot of upside, but doesn't really put it together?
One more question, and I don't know if you've seen this guy, and I'm sorry if I'm asking this and you haven't, but is Mac Jones legit?
Is Mac Jones legit? Based on what I saw last year, I'm going to give you a hard maybe. Like as a high priority free agent, I thought he had enough arm talent to make it work. I didn't think he was anything special outside of structure, but I thought there was enough in terms of just operating that Alabama offense when Tua went down, being able to make plays kind of in the structure of that offense and deliver the ball effectively to his playmakers. I think he did a solid job. I think his accuracy is good enough. I wish he processed information a little bit faster. Maybe that's something that is going to come this year with more reps. But, I remember people talking about how he was going to get beat out by the new guy in town. What's his name?
Bryce Young.
Yeah. We're talking about how he's going to get beat out by that guy. And just watching Mac Jones tape over the summer, I'm like, he's got that feel of like a really strong, like, he's not a senior, but he has that like senior quarterback vibe, if you know what I'm saying. The guy who he doesn't make mistakes. He delivers the ball where he needs to, gets it to his playmakers. So I think I don't know about all this round two stuff that's kind of picked up on Mac Jones. I think he's going to declare just so he doesn't end up somehow getting beaten out by Bryce Young and have to transfer and go through the whole thing. I think he's going to declare and end up being like maybe a 4th or 5th round pick based on what I'm hearing if he's improved this year. But I wasn't huge on him in the summer. I thought he was a good player, but not a great player. Definitely a guy that I'm keeping my eye on, especially if he declares. But he's not one that I'm kind of pounding the table for yet. But again, like I said, I haven't watched any 2020 tape in full yet. So.
And I think once we get later in the process, we're going to revisit this at some point, whether it be on the show or on Twitter or something, because I'm definitely interested to hear what you have to say. He's been mentioned a lot on this show in the last few episodes. So that's why I had to ask, because, you know, things are relevant like that. Well, anyways,
if you don't mind me throwing something out here, I think it's interesting the way that I think Joe Burrow is still impacting the quarterback view for this class, because like Joe Burrow obviously was in the last class, but everyone is looking for that. Like, who's the late day 3 guy who's going to jump up? And everyone's like, I'm putting my money on Kyle Trask. I'm putting my money on Costello and Mac Jones and all these different guys. Even DeGarrett King is getting some of that. So I think it's interesting to see. I think the everyone's wanting to find their Burrow. And you don't really – like, none of these guys are probably going to go jump Trevor Lawrence and be number one overall. We got to be realistic here. Maybe one of these guys turns into a day two pick who turns into a solid starter at the next level, but everyone's kind of still hanging on to, like, maybe I can find my Burrow this year.
Yeah, and the rise of Joe Burrow is something that we may see again. That was just an incredibly magical voodoo year. That was insane. But – go ahead and throw your stuff out for the listeners, you know, your Twitter, anything else that you want to throw out that they should go check out on you.
Yeah, so my Twitter is at @whatsondraftNFL. Again, what's on
draft. Mess that up next time.
Not what's on NFL. Dude, everyone does it. I don't know what it is. I feel like I've done a decent job of constructing the brand, but sometimes people just get those two words flopped at the end. But my website, www.whatsondraftnfl, only because whatsondraft.com, the OG, is taken by a beer company. So it's whatsondraftnfl.com. But yeah, hit me up on social media, on Twitter. You can email me. I think I have my email on my site. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions, comments, anything like that. If you want to talk about how bad my takes are, if you want to roast me for anything, let me know. I've gotten a lot better at dealing with all the roasting on Twitter now that I've had a year of having to defend a Joe Burrow very low take. So, but yeah,
well,
man. So.
You got that Joe Burrow. We didn't even touch on Ja'Marr Chase. We'll have to save that one for next time.
Yeah,
your initial sixth, seventh round grade.
Whoa. It was a sixth. I will say that I was way too low. I moved him up. He's now like an early day three guy for me. But we can always talk about what I don't like about Ja'Marr Chase, what kind of worries me. And next time you want to bring me on, man, feel free. We can talk about just more of the process stuff. Like, that's one thing I love kind of discussing. Like, obviously, I get a lot of flack for the variety of my grades. And it's not like some Belichick creative genius. I'm just an idiot with a keyboard who types real fast. But at the end of the day, I'm watching the tape. I'm trusting my eyes and writing down my opinion. So we'll kind of see how it goes, man. Like I said, anytime you want to bring me on, just let me know.
Hell yeah, Mark. You can take it easy tonight, okay?
You too, man.
Guys, do you like the John Vogel Show? Well, listen, John Vogel Show is always looking for your support. So if you haven't checked it out already, be sure that you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, turn on notifications, and get notified every time a new podcast episode drops. Next, check out anchor.fm, check out our listener support section. You can directly support the show right there. Also, John Vogel Show has a Patreon. So if you're interested in contributing there, be sure to check that out at patreon.com/John Vogel Show. This is the John Vogel Show. I hope that I thank you for your support, and I hope you continue to listen here in the near future.
Welcome back into the John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. So the Big Ten kicks off this week. And they're finally taking the field. The season was canceled. We talked about it a lot here on the show as all of that went down, the communication that went back and forth, the criticisms. It was a PR nightmare for the conference. So we're going to look at this a little bit more from, you know, we'll look at it real quick overall. And then, you know, as a conference and what to kind of expect, they're playing a 8-game schedule, I do believe. They're all in conference, no out-of-conference games this year, and should be finishing up about the same time that the SEC does. There's a lot of talent here in this division, in this conference. That's why this is a big deal that they're back on the field. Ohio State is obviously the big name draw into everybody. Everybody wants to see how they perform, how they play. Everybody wants to watch them. Ohio State is a big name here. After them, Penn State's got a lot of talent as well. Penn State's going to make a real big run in the East. I think Michigan, for the most part, is out of it. Now, if you look at the West, it's kind of wide open. There's a lot of people talking about Wisconsin, obviously, because Wisconsin's kind of been in control of that division for a long time, but I think a team that you really need to watch is Minnesota. And the reason you really need to watch Minnesota is because this is a very explosive offense. They've been working very hard on this. They've got a lot of progress. They got a senior quarterback as well who, you know, may just work himself back into first-round contention this year if everything goes right for him. And Tanner Morgan. I'm sorry, he's a junior, not a senior. Tanner Morgan is legit, though. Spent a lot of time watching him in the offseason talking about what he could bring to this team. He had put up some big numbers last year through 30 touchdowns. So the offense there is very good. They have there's a lot of guys. We'll eventually get into them. You know, like I said with Mark, there's not a lot of Big Ten tape that I've watched. He hadn't watched any. And so very briefly, let's go over a few of the guys here to keep your eyes on that are actually playing this year. The first one, obviously, everybody knows about. This is Trey Lance. Trey Lance is kind of the big name quarterback. Justin Fields. Justin Fields is the Ohio State quarterback. He's done a great job. Last year put up huge numbers. Numbers that just kind of blew everybody out of proportion. 41 touchdowns. 181.4 passer rating. He was also, that's a passer efficiency, it's a college passer rating. Also was the second team All-American, I believe, third or fourth place in the Heisman voting. And so he's kind of regarded as another one of these potential Heisman contenders. Now, obviously, the rest of the team is loaded. You've got Chris Olave, who is a very good wide receiver. As we, you know, Mark briefly mentioned him, said he hadn't watched him yet, obviously, which is fine. They've got a couple running backs this year. Trey Sermon, the transfer from Oklahoma, kind of a do-it-all, all-purpose running back, should be interesting. Another guy to kind of keep an eye on that offense as well. In the backfield is why is his name escaping me? He's from Murfreesboro. He's out of Tennessee. Master Teague. Right, Master Teague. More of a power-style running back. Somebody who's going to run downhill, not particularly fast, but so that I would expect to see them run a lot of two-back committees with Smith and Teague kind of rotating them as well. I think they could be really good. Now, the other on this defense, you know, the name that really kind of pops out that everybody really knows about at this point is Sean Wade, who could be the best corner in this class. He's very talented, very explosive as a player, and you need to keep an eye on him this year as well. Now, as we kind of get into some of the other general prospects here, Journey Brown at Penn State is the running back. He's kind of the big name running back, a lot like Saquon Barkley, a lot of that type of a athletic, explosive skill set. A lot of people are very interested to see what he does. Another big guy to bring up, you really can't talk about college foot like the Big Ten without in the NFL draft without mentioning him is Pat Freiermuth, and he's a tight end and he's very good, and he shades of, you know, Rob Gronkowski type of. Because obviously anybody, any dominant white tight end is going to be compared to Rob Gronkowski. But seriously, though, in terms of, you know, what he brings to the field, he's not a particularly great blocker from what I've seen. But he's explosive. He's big. He's very athletic. He uses that athleticism to win. He's a tough guy to contain. He's 6'5", 260, which is right there in the Rob Gronkowski body build range. He's a lot of fun and he's going to be very exciting. I'm really interested to see how they use him this year in that Penn State scheme. Sean Clifford and redshirt junior is the quarterback. We'll see how he performs. Looking across the board, I think somebody that you also should keep an eye on, there's a Minnesota offensive tackle, Daniel Falele, I believe is his name. He is 6'9", 400 pounds, and he is a beast. He's a freak. Watch him if you can this year. That's going to be a name I think that is going to rise a lot. He's very big. He's solid. He plays lower than, you know, 6'9", that's for sure. And he's very athletic for being 400 pounds, if that isn't indeed an accurate measurement. But anyways, we'll get more into Big Ten football and, you know, Big Ten and what they're like, the NFL draft prospects that are in that as the season goes on. That's just kind of like a, hey, here's some of the guys that you need to know about. I think it's also worth mentioning that Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State, is not playing this year. He opted out and is not opted back in after the COVID, all of that stuff started. So with that, that'll be the end of the show. Congratulations. You all take it easy. I think this next episode should be interesting. We've got a very nice guest lined up. I'm not going to announce that person yet. We're going to save that on Twitter for Twitter. But we got a good guest lined up, and it should be a lot of fun to kind of get into some really good content. Probably more SEC-driven, which is fine. That's what we talk a lot about on here. It's where a lot of the listening audiences is in the SEC Nation. So, God love you all. Take it easy out there, and enjoy the rest of your day. This is the John Vogel Show.